Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Practically Zero Waste, a podcast for making zero waste living as practical as possible. I'm your host, Elspeth Callahan, and welcome back. Or welcome for the first time. If this is your very first episode, I recommend that you head back to the beginning and start there. There's some great stuff, early days with early recording equipment, and I hope that you really enjoy following along the journey that I've taken in this long, long life of learning how to be a better person for the planet. For the people on the planet as well. That's something else that has certainly developed in the last few years in my understanding of what it means to be zero waste and why we're doing it. What is our motivation? It's not just to save the planet, it's to save the people on the planet too. It's been a while. I've been on a mat leave with a baby. My baby's almost 6 months old now, and I have still not come back to the podcast. There's no pressure to come back early. I'm not saying that I'm not going to take any longer amount of time on a mat leave, but I want to get some episodes out that have been sitting in my back pocket for a little while that I'm interested in sharing with you that were definitely recorded in the last few weeks of my pregnancy where I'm very out of breath. It's very hard to talk because I'm sitting with a baby kicking my lungs, but I want to share these with you. One of them is so good and such a lovely conversation between two wonderful women who are running Fab Scrap in New York. You'll be able to hear Jessica and Camille's stories about how they came to develop Fab Scrap and what it does and how it's so awesome. So I'll let the episode speak for itself. Enjoy it, and hopefully I'll be back a little bit sooner with some more episodes with Teresa and I talking about the book On Fire, and we'll be getting in and out of all those topics. They're pretty big and pretty fun. I'm excited to be releasing these little bits of content throughout the next few months. We'll see if I come back full time. Who knows? But for now, enjoy. Let's go. So, can you each tell me a bit about yourselves and what life was like before founding Fab Scrap?
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm the founder and CEO of Fab Scrap. And prior to Fab Scrap, I was working at New York City's Department of Sanitation in the Bureau of Recycling and Sustainability. I was managing the city's clothing and e-waste recycling programs. Wow. So I was seeing what New York City residents throw out every day and trying to help apartment buildings do better and find other options for their waste. And several fashion companies with their headquarters in New York City were describing a waste stream that was textile like clothing, but wasn't clothing yet. It was all of the design waste that was coming out of their offices, and they were looking for a solution to that. And that's kind of where Fab Scrap started.
That is so cool.
Hey there, I'm Camille. I'm the co-founder and creative director at Fab Scrap. Gosh, when I think about life before Fab Scrap, it seems like a complete lifetime that is so separate and so far away. My career had been evening wear fashion design. So very, very different world. Basically, you know, it was runway shows and red carpet looks and playing with sequins and beading and all the pretty glitzy stuff. So very, very different from the life we know now, which is very much warehouses and volume and lots of fabric. But I would say that, you know, the main thing that came from that experience was really just having a different perspective. And that was only gained through working as a designer and seeing all the waste that was being thrown out after each collection. There is so much waste in general with fashion design and with evening wear in particular. That is one category that really is pretty much one-time use. You know, wear a gown or a cocktail dress or a wedding gown for that one event. And you likely, if you attend a different one, always have a different dress or different look. So for me, it was, you know, really apparent, I think, more than if I had worked in a different category of fashion, you know, how wasteful the industry was. And from that process of each collection, just how much usable fabric was being thrown out.
Wow, what a stark difference between your two kind of
things. I'd agree with that, yes.
I love it. I think that's so crazy. So how did you guys come together?
We were simultaneously kind of working on the same problem, Camille, from the fabric redistribution side and trying to get the usable fabric that she saw into the hands of students and artists and crafters who could make use of it, and me from the collections and recycling side and wanting to like create the infrastructure and logistics for brands to have an outlet for it. And a mutual friend introduced us at a really great time when we were both kind of starting, and yeah, it worked out really well that I could kind of get fabric in and Camille could get fabric out.
That's such a cool combination. I love, I was just talking with an old employee from the store that I work at. So it's an eco lifestyle shop here in Peterborough. And he's now working in waste management here in the city. And he was talking about just how overwhelming it is to work. He just works in hazardous waste, but how overwhelming it is to be faced with how much usable stuff is brought to the dump on a daily basis. And how tiring it is, because he's like, well, like, I just, like, there's a good couch, and there's a good couch, and, you know, I've already taken one couch home, I only need one couch, like, what do I do with all of this usable stuff that people are just, like, overwhelmed by their own amount of waste and having to bring it into someplace like the dump? Like, what is that like, that feeling like of overwhelm when you're trying to deal with how much textile waste there was? And trying to get it out to people. So like, anybody take it.
I mean, that's something that I think never really goes away. And that's maybe one of the like problems created by a solution, I'll say, is that like New York City in particular handles waste really well. You put your waste out at the curb and it disappears overnight. And there's not even really a landfill in the New York City area anymore. And so when people throw things away here, it actually does go away. It goes to other states, it goes across the country. So that's one of those things that it's made it kind of easier for people to waste and that they're not seeing the volume every day. But for people who work in it, like Camille and I do now, I think it's really, it's almost inescapable. In that, like, the second that you feel like you've made some space or cleared some room or found a solution for one thing, more shows up, and the waste cycle never really stops. When I was at sanitation, in working in the city's clothing reuse program, we were recycling 250,000 pounds of clothing a month at the height. And New York City as a whole throws out 200,000 tons. Of clothing every single year, which is 14 times the weight of the Brooklyn Bridge. And that's just New York City and just the five boroughs. And so it is this massive amount of material. And I think that's something that is like largely unseen and it's kind of hidden. And so it's hard to really put into context for a lot of people.
You know, there's a certain can-do mentality that people have in waste and recycling, I think, that is pretty unique. And I will say that's, you know, that feeling of, you know, the overwhelming part of it and like facing the task at hand. I will say for both me and Jessica, that tends to be actually a motivator and something that is really encouraging as far as like, okay, we can solve this, we can do this. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons for founding FabScrap and for wanting to make change is that it was actually something that was motivating and something that we were, for some reason, rising to the challenge and wanting to tackle.
That's crazy. So what is, like, we've talked a little bit about the quantity, but why is so much waste happening? And maybe that's an obvious question because there's waste happening in absolutely every sector of the world. But why in particular is there so much waste in the fabric industry?
I can kind of touch on post-consumer just because of my work at sanitation. And then maybe Camille, you can go over the pre-consumer that we work on now at FabScrap. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of what everyone buys, wears, uses, discards, or donates, I think there's so much because the global clothing industry has really sped up and it's changed how quickly clothing is available, the cost at which clothing is available, but it's also unfortunately affected the quality of clothing available. And so we're seeing so much more clothing, but so much less of it is really high quality, meant to stand multiple uses, multiple wears, multiple washes. And so when we were working with nonprofits in the city, we were seeing over time more clothing, but less of it, even a resellable quantity or quality. And so I think that's one of the big shifts that we've seen in why textile waste, after you take out traditional recyclables and food waste for composting, textile waste is the next biggest piece of the waste stream that cities will have to solve if they're serious about zero waste.
Wow. Okay. So it's that much of a presence in every kind of city, not just in a big fashion city like, I was going to say Toronto, like New York.
Yeah, I think pretty standard across the board, it's 6 to 8% of most cities' waste.
Yeah, and with FabScrap, we focus specifically on the pre-consumer textile waste that Jessica mentioned. So pretty much any fabric waste that is coming from brands or companies that design with textiles. So it could be fashion, it could be entertainment, it could be interior design. Pretty much anyone who works with textiles to make a final product. And this is all of these different steps along the process and the supply chain is basically what I was seeing firsthand when I was designing. So from the moment you have the concept of a design or a final product, you need swatches to kind of build that mood board and to kind of tie in the whole collection. So all these headers that come from textile mills that are kind of used as sales tools, already there at the very, very beginning. And again, this is just like brainstorming and the creative building. All of that waste accumulates just with swatches and fabric samples. And then once you actually develop the fabrics to order, there's a lot of cuts sent back and forth for approval. And then, of course, the actual ordering of the fabric, and there are usually minimums involved, and not all the yardage is used or needed for that sample. And so, then you go further along into production. There's so many steps along the process to even creating the sample. And that's not even, once the sample is ordered wholesale and put into production. And so there are a lot of different parts along the way in which, fashion's kind of entrenched in this very traditional model of how to design and how a sample product development process goes. And so in following that, there is just so much waste that accumulates along the way.
And waste that you wouldn't even think about. Like when we were planning this conversation, I was thinking about the waste that comes from if I were to cut out, if I were to sew a project at home and I was cutting out the pieces from a bigger piece of fabric, then yeah, there's going to be waste from the edge from the pieces that I don't need. And that's all that had crossed my mind. But oh my gosh, there's so much more involved.
And part of our awareness building is, kind of shedding light on that very internal behind the scenes process. Those who don't work in fashion or in interior design or entertainment, they wouldn't really know the ins and outs of how all of that happens. But it does totally tie into consumer behavior and, them realizing that their final product that they're purchasing went through all those other steps, I think is really, really important to be aware of and something that at FabScrap we really try to educate on.
And so what does textile waste do in landfills? And I wanted to talk about that because similar in my mind to like food waste or like organic material in a landfill, I was thinking that perhaps fabric is breaking down in a different way that is producing a different level of greenhouse gas emissions than something like a cardboard box sitting in a landfill. Is that the case at all? Do you know much about what either synthetic or natural material is doing in a landfill?
Yeah, I mean, I think less of the impact is that fabric in landfill has a huge amount of greenhouse gas emissions, or more so that so much clothing now is synthetic or a blend of synthetic and natural fibers, specifically like polyester being one of the most used fibers. And it's essentially plastic. And I don't think a lot of people realize that like polyester is just another form mm-hmm. of plastic, which means that as it breaks down, it will become smaller and smaller pieces, but it's never going to completely biodegrade. It's never going to completely disintegrate. And so more so than greenhouse gases, I think the problem with clothing going into landfills is its effect on our water systems and effects on how things leach into our land. And so from microplastics, from all of the various dyes and chemicals used to treat clothing to give, you know, jeans those whiskers or like very specific color patterns, or even to like fire treat children's clothing, all of that is chemicals on clothing that we're not thinking about when they go into the landfill. I think that's the bigger impact and why we're attempting to keep textiles out of landfill. The other half of it is that textiles are really, really environmentally intense to make. So much water is used up front to create cotton. Oil is used to create the polyester. And so because so many resources go into making the fabric, that ways that we can extend the life of that material is really important. And so one of the things that we communicate with our customers is that for every 10 pounds of fabric they can save from landfill, it has the CO2 reducing equivalent of planting a tree. And that's mostly because if you're using fabric that already exists, you don't have to use all of those resources up front to make the virgin material. And so I think between the effect on the waterways and between saving all of the resources used in making virgin material, that's where the real impact comes from.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I really, I think that's something that we talk a lot about on this show is making sure that you're, if you're able to prioritize secondhand, that that is the main reason why you would, is because those resources that have gone into making these products already have been spent. And so rather than drawing yes. from new resources, virgin plastics, all of those things, instead you are using what already exists in the world. And that is a more sustainable action than even if you were to buy something that is super sustainable but new, like to use something that right. is already in existence is the better choice in a lot of cases.
Yes, for sure.
So what is FabScrap and how did it finally begin?
FabScrap is a textile recycling and reuse nonprofit in New York City. We are a service for the fashion, interior, and entertainment industries in the city. We try and be very convenient and transparent in picking up excess and unwanted material. So we give all of the clients that we have impact reports every year of what they diverted, what was reused, what was recycled. And we're working with about 500 companies now to collect their excess material. So one, we're a service. I would say two, we're a resource. So any of that material that's not proprietary and reusable, we want to make available to people who can use it. And so we have a fabric thrift store where fabrics are really accessibly priced and really high quality. So we have a fabric thrift store. We have our online store pre-COVID and hopefully again soon. We were doing fabric pop-ups at schools across the country. So really wanting to be a materials resource for artists and crafters and creators. And then third, we've really become a community of, I think, change makers. We've had over 6,000 people volunteer to help us sort the material. We do virtual presentations at schools. We host virtual workshops where creative professionals in our network can skill share for free or for a donation to anyone who's looking to learn a new skill to upcycle fabric. So a service, a resource, and a community, and that's kind of where we lie in the nonprofit environmental world.
I love that it's all three of those things, especially that it's a community. And I think too that it's so exciting to see an environmental action force like FabScrap, where you're able to target the very specific group of people that is, you know, rising up in this industry. So like working with students directly who are entering the either fashion design or interior design business, whatever it is, to be able to teach them right away that there is going to be a lot of waste there maybe doesn't have to be? And what are you going to do with the waste that does occur that maybe is unavoidable?
I was just going to say, I love that you mentioned that, because a lot of the motivations for what we do at FabScrap, I would say, especially for the reuse side, is definitely having wished that as a student that more of these things that happen behind the scenes and more of these steps had been explained a little bit more fully.
Yeah.
I think that having that realization and being introduced to all those concepts at the beginning even is just a good way to get students to brainstorm and think outside the box in a slightly different way before they enter the industry. So I love that you mentioned that, because that's definitely something that we feel very passionate about.
Yeah, and I think we really come with a message of like empowerment, because we've had situations where like we're speaking to a class or working with a group of interns or even a volunteer who then later becomes an intern at a fashion company or is a new hire at a fashion company, and they suggest FabScrap. And so the fact that they can bring FabScrap to like a global brand, I think can be really empowering too, that they're making change.
I love the idea of empowering too, because it's, you're talking about just presenting the whole problem from the very beginning rather than like years into the industry, you're finding out, when stuff goes away to the dump, it doesn't just disappear. That whole revelation moment.
That's an experience that we try to cultivate when visiting our warehouse in Brooklyn. We have this giant pile of black trash bags. But what's inside isn't trash. It's just the fabric that we haven't sorted yet. And so just to actually like see in one place all of the things that didn't go away, they got collected and they're here and they're like in front of our volunteers or in front of our shoppers, right next to what we have sorted and what is beautiful and available to shop, is a real like trash to treasure juxtaposition, like that's very in your face. And so I think it really helps like to see that volume. Most people never see 40,000 pounds of material in one place like that.
Yeah, that visual is so important, because what we're dealing with so often in the zero waste zero waste conversation is a lot of intangible, yes, I'm diverting waste, but how much waste am I diverting? Or I am avoiding creating waste, but that's not something I can easily measure or have a visual for. Because it's not being created in the first place, which is great, but it's so nice to see visuals like this where you have a trash heap full of really valuable, usable stuff that is about to be turned into treasure or turned into something useful and practical. I think that it's a nice addition to their experience when they come to your warehouse. Is being an NGO an important part of how you continue to exist? Like, this could never have been just a thrift shop or just an online market for used fabric. You had to maybe become an NGO in order to have the volunteers, or what was that part like?
I mean, I think there were a couple things that played into the decision to be a nonprofit. One is how much education we had planned to do and are now doing, and like really wanting that to be accessible and industry changing, and to be a neutral third party where no individual is benefiting from what we're doing. And I think that's the main point of a nonprofit, is that no individual is personally benefiting from the new infrastructure, from the new redistribution, from the community we're building, and that it's collectively owned as sort of a nonprofit, I think is really important. It allows us to be a neutral third party when performing our research, when sharing that research in an educational capacity, when advocating for things, whether that's with brands or with like government policy. And so I think that that designation really helps us sort of maintain some neutrality while being very specific about the problem that we're solving and what our mission is.
There's a recycling truck. I'm going to wait for it to pass because it's very loud on my end.
Oh, that's really appropriate, actually.
So how does FabScrap work from a customer standpoint?
So like we were kind of mentioning before, you know, there's so much more to the entire, our entire operations than just, you know, having fabric maybe to purchase. Everything is a kind of circular model. And so it all starts with, of course, us providing service to the brand partners that have chosen to recycle with us. So we, you know, similar to plastic and cardboard recycling, you know, we show up at their studio or office and take the FabScrap bags that we have given them to fill from their location. And we give them the choice of whether they want to recycle proprietary materials or non-proprietary materials and give them two different colored bags to fill accordingly. So we pick those up once they're ready to go and take it to our warehouse, everything, because we obviously want to measure our impact. Everything is weighed and cataloged once it comes into our warehouse. And that, of course, goes back to what Jessica had mentioned about each brand receiving their own impact report. So we do keep very detailed data. Exactly. Very detailed data on each brand's individual volumes and what that means and their own impact. And then once we have captured that data, then it's time to figure out what is inside those bags because that will help us determine how to keep it out of landfill. So anything that's reusable is very relatively quick to figure out. It's larger of a piece. It's in really great condition. It's pretty much very easy to use and in a shape that would be very easy to make into something else. So those get pulled from the bags immediately. And then we, you know, give a small orientation to our volunteers and to our sorters on the smaller pieces that are not as easy to use, that are maybe those swatches or sewing offcuts, just the little bits and pieces that are a little bit too difficult to work with. And anything that does not contain spandex actually goes into our recycling model and becomes insulation. So we actually end up shredding that, and it just becomes different types of insulation, which could be used for homes or car doors or moving blankets. And then the pieces that did contain spandex, those we actually push to reuse. And we encourage our community there to be really creative with the different types of ways that you can think outside of the box. Sometimes there are arts and crafts needs. Sometimes, you know, using it for filling. There are a lot of different ways to keep that out of landfill with just a different creative outlook. And so we have that sorted by color, and that's available for shopping. And then the great part of this is that if someone is shopping with us, which of course is one of our operations, then if they end up making their own products from the fabrics that they purchase with us and have their own textile waste, even if they're not a brand, we do allow individuals to also drop off their scraps. It's just a slightly different adjusted service fee, but totally easy for them to just come by the warehouse and drop it off and also recycle. And then that kind of, you know, goes back into the whole beginning that I mentioned. So it definitely is, you know, we offer the recycling, we offer the reuse. And so it really doesn't matter if you're an entrepreneur or if you're a very established brand, we kind of offer all the bits and pieces to that design cycle.
That's awesome. And we were talking a little bit before, Jessica, you worked in sanitation, the textile recycling that's offered through the city. I maybe just want to jump back there right now, because the kinds of things that as an individual that I might consider dropping off at a textile recycling facility or something like FabScrap, what comes to mind is clothing that is ripped or worn through, or stuff that I just can't repair, or if I wasn't even interested in sewing, things that I wouldn't repair at all, that I would just be throwing in the garbage, like a shirt that gets a rip or something. A lot of people don't have those skills to fix it or the desire to fix it. And that kind of thing would just go in the trash. Is that something that FabScrap is accepting, or that the textile recycling for the city was accepting?
So the textile recycling that I was working on at DSNY was really just really convenient reuse and donation. So we were putting donation bins in apartment buildings. The program's called Refashion NYC for anyone listening in New York. It's free. It's free. Your building signs up. You get a bin that can go in your basement or laundry room, mail room, lobby. But that way, residents of the building don't have to like bring giant bags of clothing donations down the street or on the subway or in a cab. They could just donate from their home. And the thought was being that if it was that easy, then maybe more clothing would be saved from landfill and make its way towards local nonprofits. The city works with Goodwill and Housing Works. And so in that way, it's not technically recycling so much as it is just a really convenient and like upgraded logistics of reuse, I guess. In working with the city, though, I did work with a lot of nonprofits and hear a lot from sort of the textile recycling and reuse industry. And I think there's so many different layers of sorting that that clothing will go through before it goes to landfill that from what I heard, and granted, this was like 5 or 6 years ago when I was at the city, is a lot of the nonprofits were saying, don't judge your clothing too harshly. And that small things that are repairable, someone shopping thrift might want to repair that. And Elizabeth Klein actually had a really like good piece of advice there, that for every piece that needs mending when you donate, donate 2 or 3 that don't. And that's a good way to help the nonprofit sort of keep things in balance and keep things in check. And so particularly, I would say things like underwear, bras, socks, those are not going to get reused. And I think in that case, there's not a lot of options for those like more hygienic clothing options, except to throw them out when they're like past the point of wear. But other things, I think you don't have to be quite so judgy about. And as long as you're sort of also donating usable things that you do feel good about their quality and their reuse value, then I think it's okay to mix in some things that might need mending. But again, I wouldn't, like soiled old ripped sheets definitely will not be reused, do not have any value for that nonprofit. And it does take a lot of resources for them to sort through the stuff that's sellable and get it into their stores versus what's not. So that's sort of the piece there that I think working in post-consumer textiles that I took away, is that sometimes things just aren't recyclable and they aren't reusable. And so doing everything that you can to repair is important. And if not, then I think hopefully we're moving in a direction where textile recycling, like actual recycling, not downcycling or upcycling, but like fabric back into fabric, I think hopefully we're moving in that direction with some new tech that's on the horizon. Just not quite there yet. And then with FabScrap, we don't take anything that's used. We work, our sort of stream of material comes exclusively from businesses, and it's all excess or unwanted material from the design process. If it's been sold and used, we generally don't work with that material, just because there's so many other nonprofits that do.
That's great. And nice to have that distinction that like you're able to focus a little bit more niche or more specifically on just new material that was going to be wasted, because that is such a huge problem anyway, that you don't also need to be right. working with like the used clothing industry or the used or like the fabric recycling industry.
Exactly. Yeah.
The thing that is most in my face, and I use that as kind of like a way of maybe identifying what other people might find as their biggest problem when it comes to textile waste, is what to do other than throw things in the trash when it really is just trash at this point. And I was mm-hmm. wondering about your insulation that you are either personally creating, or you have somebody, a third party, creating this insulation out of fabric. What does that look like? And can stuff like that be the grungier stuff?
Definitely, not through us, and I think nonprofits, depending on who you're donating to, are becoming more and more selective about it. But when you give clothing to a nonprofit, they're probably going to use about 15% in their own thrift stores, and the rest gets baled and then sent to like a secondhand market, and there it's sorted again, and it might go through multiple rounds of sorting. And so some of that will eventually make its way to the same shredder that we use and will become insulation. Some of it, particularly like white t-shirts, if the white t-shirt is stained, but it's generally a white t-shirt, those get cut up and used as rags, especially in the automotive industry. So there are some alternatives, but there's a couple layers to get there. It's not necessarily something where, like, I think bringing a bag of totally soiled, used things to a nonprofit with the intention of saying, like, well, these are for shred and these are for, like, these are for donation. I don't think, like, that's quite how it works, just because the industry is so deep and so widespread. So I think in general, some of those things will eventually make their way to the same shredder that we use.
Wow, a secondhand market. That sounds just very elaborate. Multi-layered levels that I've never considered.
Yeah, I've sorted it both. Nonprofits, when they get those initial donations, like, they're not really set up to be textile recyclers or waste managers. They're really just trying to pull out the items that upon resale really support their other mission. And so, like, I think that's part of why textile recycling is like decades behind other commodity streams, is because for so long it's been managed by nonprofits. And when all clothing was pretty high quality or repairable, it made a lot more sense than it does now with the volume and sort of like disposability of clothing that we see. But the first wave will sort for high quality, what's resellable. That secondhand market is just sorting by item type to create mass market bales. So they'll create bales of women's dresses or kids' shoes or men's pants or denim or even like ugly Christmas sweaters. And so that's where it becomes like wholesale, and that's where it gets distributed like across the world.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Okay. We can focus back in on Fab Scrap. As far as the issue of the ongoing problem of overproduction in the clothing industry goes, I have heard about incineration happening for not even like these grungy, grimy things that can't be reused ever. It's people burning new clothes because there's too much. Can you tell me more about that and why that's a thing?
Yeah. I would say one of the more eye-opening things for me when like getting into this industry and learning more about fashion and sort of sustainability therein is how important brand equity and like intellectual property is to these fashion companies. And so when you're hearing about new merchandise that's being incinerated, it's because it was probably overproduced and isn't moving or selling as planned, but it's not something that, because it's currently in their stores, they would want to donate. Because if they're selling it in their store, but you could also go down the street and find it at your local thrift store for fractions of the price, it lowers the brand value. And so because they don't want to sell it in both places, that's where they tend to lean towards destruction. I think incineration is like the worst case scenario. We've done some proprietary destruction at Fab Scrap in select cases as a means to avoid incineration. Like if we can shred it instead and turn it into insulation or carpet padding or mattress stuffing, so much better than just burning new product. And so we definitely like, we want brands to feel the impact of that, though, that like there was a mistake here somewhere along the supply chain, that so much was overproduced. And so that does have a higher service fee for us when we're doing proprietary destruction and shredding, we do charge the brands more because I think it's important that they feel the effects of that in their bottom line, and it helps them plan better in the future.
Yikes. And I'm glad that you point out that there is, that there are other methods of destruction or use of an overproduced product than just incineration, mm-hmm. because incineration is the one that we hear about because it's the most shocking. You're just like, you're burning new clothes. Are you insane? So right. I understand that that has been kind of the one that floats around the most in the news. So it's nice to know that there are other methods, but it's still, yeah, it's hard to hear the fact that new stuff is just being made and destroyed. Like, what was the point of all of that?
Well, and we're hoping that eventually we get to the point where we can walk them back from total destruction and move more so towards, well, if we cut out this part and the rest of it is still usable, could we work with an org to upcycle it?
Right.
Where if we're removing the identifiable pieces, could we in some way reimagine or reconfigure or reuse this? And so that's something that I think takes a lot of trust, and I hope we're getting there, that eventually we'll be able to remove identifying pieces or have a brand partner who's willing to let us be the connective tissue to another org who could reuse those items instead.
I think that's a great transition to kind of the practical side of this conversation, where we can maybe start looking at what can scrap fabric be used for, either through FabScrap, if you're able to purchase through them, or if you just have scrap fabric and you're looking for ways to creatively upcycle, maybe when you don't know how to sew, or even if you do. Do you guys have some practical applications for scrap fabric? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, that's actually some of the fun aspects of connecting with our community is honestly just having so many people come back and show either on a photo on their phone or, them wearing what they've made, but just sharing what they've created from the fabrics that they've purchased from FabScrap in our thrift store. So pretty much anyone who maybe is not as into sewing and just wants a little bit more of a practical solution, obviously, using scraps for rags and is always an option. But then there are a lot more creative ways in terms of, sometimes there are some companies that make dog beds and they just need stuffing to fill, or even gyms who are no way associated with fashion need to fill their punching bags. There are a lot of different out of the box ways of using the scrap fabric. Of course, because a lot of our community is very creative and wanting to create and make something from the fabric, then we do push a lot of arts and crafts solutions. In addition, we do have workshops that we do each month because we do feel like it's really important to give as many examples as possible to people of what they can do with fabric. And we make sure that a lot of these workshops are also, varying in skill level. So a lot of beginner's classes mixed in with maybe a couple that might be a little bit more intermediate, but definitely different examples and ways in which maybe you don't even need a sewing machine for, how to weave a scrap rug, as an example. And we also have a featured designer program, which is another kind of example setting in terms of, showing people, hey, these designers are artists. We're able to use textile waste to make products and then also have a viable business from. And so those designers and artists that we feature every 3 months are definitely also knowledgeable and have so many skills to share themselves. But then also in addition, show that, they can create a profitable and working business from that as well.
That's so exciting. I love the think outside the box ideas beyond just, okay, you have to learn how to sew so you can repair things. Things like socks, how am I supposed to deal with all of my husband's socks?
Yeah, and that's the thing is that people always think, oh, well, if it's fabric, then I have to make apparel from it. But actually, there are so many different ways, even in creating art, that you can use fabric as a medium. So a lot of really great ideas that are shared within our community. And yeah, like I was mentioning, whenever we come across someone who could be a great example or an instructor who has a skill of ways that they are reusing that are especially creative and outside of the box, like we're always so thrilled to have them share their knowledge and to further inspire our community.
That is so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think with stuffing, the only really important part is that you're creating essentially that isolated container that the stuffing goes into, and then you have your decorative cover that it slips inside. So a lot of the fabric scraps that we have that are used for stuffing are a mix of knits and wovens. And so in using that as stuffing, while it could probably be washable, I think, of course, they shift a little bit. And so I think one thing that you would have to just keep in mind is so that you can easily take it out of the decorative cover or cushion, whatever it may be, and be able to like reshape it a little bit after wash and to create a separate case. But honestly, we've had so many interior designers who create cushions or like seating or that sort of thing that come in, and they'll bring like their sample, and so that they know how much they need to source from us, and just stuff it on the spot to make sure it's compact.
That's
enough.
Awesome.
it's definitely a collaborative activity when they come in, but it is really cool to see that it's a very out of the box way, but very functional way of furthering a product, but then also keeping fabric out of landfill.
Yeah, totally. Companies that you want to celebrate that are either preventatively working to not create fabric waste, like either in their design process or something like that. Maybe their patterns are different in order to prevent waste. Companies that you want to recommend and maybe who's inspiring you guys each.
At least for me, people ask all the time, well, I'm not a company, I'm not a brand, like what can I do? And I think with us, it really comes back to the education and awareness component. So much of everyone's individual impact, I believe, is rooted in their perspective of how, every action, whether it's purchasing, whether it's, deciding whether or not like something should be recycled, like every decision made has some sort of effect on our environment and some sort of consequence. And I think, again, like everything, whether it's like trash recycling or trash pickup, like some things just run a little bit too smooth to where we don't see those after effects and we don't realize fully what those actions create. And I think that's definitely apparent, obviously, in fashion and interior and entertainment industries, which is why we're doing what we're doing. But I think if everyone collectively as a whole understood their impact on like every part of their daily life, that creates so much of an effect. And I think that awareness building is something that can also be shared between people. And you don't have to be focused on one particular industry. Like you can apply that to literally any part of someone's life or any industry, because in general, I think just understanding the use of resources and how there's so many valuable resources that go into every product that we consume. I think it's just that change in perspective of, maybe it's planning ahead that day and making sure you bring a tote bag and have a water bottle, a reusable water bottle. It can be very small that way.
Just specifically in terms of textiles and like practical things that we can do differently, I also never really took the time to check tags on my clothing for what I was buying before. And so I think even just becoming more familiar with what it is, like with food, for example, people now read more about the ingredients and are making decisions about what they put in their body. But I think we could be reading the ingredients of our clothes too, and what we put on our body. And so knowing that polyester is plastic, and if you're wearing something polyester, you're wearing plastic against your skin all day. Or for example, for us, knowing that we can't shred spandex, and so trying to make decisions about clothing, maybe with a little less stretch. For example, I know like Levi's has an option now, if you're buying jeans online, you can specifically filter for jeans with no spandex, which I think is great. So A, knowing like what's in the clothing is really helpful. And B, knowing how to care for clothing so it lasts longer. I think there's a lot of sort of like, it all goes in the wash, it all goes in the dry, and it is what it is when it comes out. But I think that there's ways to actually care for your clothing so that it lasts longer. It maintains its shape and its color and its wear so that you don't feel the need to dispose it so quickly. And even learning simple repairs. And I know not everybody has an interest in that. And so just knowing how to better care for your clothing from the start, I think is a really like practical next step.
That's great. Yeah. And I love the idea of it just the reminder that everything does add up, even though it feels like your actions are futile because you're looking at a mountain of trash. That's really valuable. Thank you.
I guess that's like kind of a nice segue, is like individual actions maybe feel futile. I don't think that they are, but that's one of the reasons we work with companies, because I think their impact is so much more significant in terms of their resource use, their global decision making. And so wanting to affect the way that companies waste is really where I feel like that's where we need to start, like holding their feet to the fire and holding them accountable. And one of the reasons we present them with their data every year. And so I think in terms of like companies that I think are doing well, a lot of companies have started to make sustainable commitments. And I think the main thing there is to just, as a customer, like figure out what the details of those commitments are, make sure that they align with your values and that they're actually following up on them. We received grants from Nordstrom and Urban this year to really help like scale what we're doing. And I think that's great leadership for like, they have things to change, but they know that like making our service more available to the industry kind of high tide raises all ships. And so I think there's companies that are making commitments, and it's just important to track those that you care about and make sure that they're following up on them or asking them what their commitments are.
Yeah, the idea of handing them an impact report, however often you guys do that, have you seen in the years that you've been open the same companies actually reduce their negative impacts over time?
That's a funny question, because we're still pretty new. We've been open for 5 years this year, but I don't really want to count last year. So I would say we've been in service for about 4 years. And the way that we're set up is definitely pay as you throw, which incentivizes throwing away less because then your costs will be less. But what we see actually is that initially brands are so excited to have an outlet that they feel okay about, that it starts with fabric, but then they ask, well, can I send our leather? Can I send our yarn? Can I send our buttons? So we actually see like what they're sending us go up at first. But for some of the clients who have been on for like 4 of those 5 years, they're starting to have conversations about like, well, how do we reduce costs? Like, we want to work with you, but we want to reduce our costs. And that's where it comes into like, let's discuss the type of material that you're throwing out and like what your options are. And so I think we're getting to that point.
That's great. Are there any specific companies that you guys would like to recommend for listeners who are doing a good job as far as you can see, that are doing a good job to reduce their negative impact?
I think... Let me start over there. I think the fashion industry is so global, and negative impact along the supply chain is really, really hard to track and undo. And so it's hard to call out a company in where I feel like they're like from start to finish in the right place. And so instead of like sort of giving a shout out to brands we all know, I actually think like I would want to instead just encourage people to check out local makers markets. There's usually like artists in Fleas, and they're doing really cool things on a small local scale. And a lot of them, because they tend to be like small entrepreneurs, are doing it really sustainably. And so instead of trying to find the greenest version of the global companies, I think just trying to be a little bit more local in where you shop, I think that's honestly the best place to start.
Yeah, I would just want to add to that, any companies that also are starting to explore more circular models would be something to pay attention to. And then also any companies who are investing in certified products, to also just kind of maybe look into different certifications that are easily recognizable when you're shopping.
That's great. Thank you. And thanks for the reminder to source local as well. I know that a local company to us here in Peterborough that I've talked about or talked with on the podcast before, Happy Beach, she's the one who's using thrift shop fabric, so sheets or anything that she can source secondhand in that way, because we don't have access to something like FabScrap here locally unless she were to shop online. Maybe that's a thing you can tell me about in a second. Anyway, she uses secondhand fabric, but she makes cloth produce bags and reusable masks, all these different kind of products now. And that's been really nice to see and have that continue to be part of her commitment all throughout her growth of her business, to stay making sure that it's always secondhand fabric. I think that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Who is inspiring you in the low waste repurposing field lately that you'd like to share with listeners? Anyone in particular?
I'll go just really quick. Timo Rasmussen and Holly McKillen, they wrote a book on zero waste patterning, and I always recommend it. I am obsessed with it. I think it's just a really amazing way of not necessarily reinventing the wheel, because so many of these silhouettes or change of silhouettes are basically like the base of fashion and something that should be always an inspiration. But the way in which they present the information and challenge people to rethink silhouettes, I think is really incredible. And the book is beautiful. It has really great imagery in addition to really detailed steps. So I think that's really amazing. And I think if the next generation is starting to really dive into that, into zero waste patterning, then I think that could be really, really fantastic for future apparel and also in terms of textile waste.
And I would just want to, I guess, shout out Carmen Gama, who worked at Eileen Fisher, specifically on the like Eileen Fisher Renew, in sort of like collecting old Eileen Fisher and sorting it and reworking it or finding ways to redistribute it, very similar to what we're doing. But she's just launched a new project that's all of the garments are totally remade from secondhand and doing it in a really, really beautiful way. So yeah, she... love following her and her work.
Cool. I don't know if I'll include this next bit, but I was randomly in an Old Navy lately, and the fact that COVID has slowed a lot of their shipments of new clothing meant that the stuff that they were able to sell in their store was just what was being returned from their online sales, that people, it didn't fit or whatever, and so they sent it back. And it was like only a percentage of the store was that, but it was probably more than they normally would put out on the shelves when they have new product coming in. And I just thought that like just sort of tied in there a little bit where, yeah, it's just so interesting to think of what would be happening to that amount of returns normally for most stores, how much abundance there was even without new shipments coming in.
Yeah, I think returns are one of the next big hurdles that the industry has to solve, particularly like in COVID, where so much was bought online without being able to touch it or try it on or see actual items in person. I've heard anecdotally that like returns have gone up exponentially. And so finding ways to make that material usable or redistribute, even just the reverse logistics of getting it back into inventory, is just not something that I think companies have prepared well for.
Yeah, that feels like a whole other kind of conversation today. Yeah. For another day. Where can people go to learn more about FabScrap and maybe get involved?
On our website, www.fabscrap.org, you can sign up for service. If you're affiliated with the brand, you can sign up to volunteer. You can sign up for a virtual shopping appointment or an in-person shopping appointment. You can also sign up for our newsletter on our website, which is about every other week, maybe once or twice a month, just sharing who our new featured designers are, who our workshop hosts are for the month, any updates or new events, and Instagram, we're fab_scrap.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It was so interesting to hear beyond just like the mild behind the scenes that most people might have heard of as far as like the textile industry goes. It was so interesting to go like deeper into this conversation and learn about what's happening to the waste and what we can do to prevent a little bit more of that. So thank you for the work that you're doing and for being on the show today. This was so good.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us. It was great to be on.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. If you want to learn more from Jessica and Camille, you can follow all the links in the show notes. You'll be able to find all kinds of information on their website and follow them on social media. They just opened a new location back in November of 2021, and so that's really exciting as well. I hope you're able to follow them and learn a lot more about what they're doing and look for different ways that you can upcycle or reuse fabric in your own life. Look for local sources of upcycled fabric and keep any and all fabric out of the landfill. If you enjoyed today's episode, you would probably also enjoy a couple of our fashion episodes. I will link those in the show notes as well, and you can find those in our archives wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to follow the show, you can follow us on Instagram at practicallyzerowastepod. You can send an email to practicallyzerowaste@gmail.com, and I love when people get in touch. Even though I have not touched that email in a little while, I will get back on it because I really love hearing from you guys. The show has been fairly inactive lately, but if you do still want to support it, you can always find us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/Elspeth Callahan. That's ko-fi.com/Elspeth Callahan. You can always support the show as a one-off or as a more recurring thing. That's all from me this week. I've been spending a lot of time outside and also a lot of time inside drinking tea, nursing the baby. But getting outside has been life-changing and magical, and I am so grateful for access to any and all outdoor spaces, even if we're just playing in a pile of snow that has been plowed in a parking lot. It's still good, and you know what? There's street lights, so you can play in the dark, and it's kind of awesome. So find that nature wherever it is. Find those times and spaces to be outside, because it is paramount to building resiliency, good immune systems, and enjoying the nature that is around us, no matter what it is, so that our kids grow up and we grow up appreciating the world around us and remember what it is that we're fighting for, people and planet. Have a great week, everyone. Talk to you soon.